Welcome to the Queensland Economy Watch special coronavirus podcast. I'm your host, Gene Tunney. Joining me today is the chief economist of CCIQ, Dr. Marcus Smith, to chat about coronavirus. Marcus, thanks for coming back onto the podcast.
Yeah, good afternoon. Great to be here, Gene.
Excellent. Okay, Marcus, the first thing I'd like to ask you about is the article by Tony Moore, COVID-19's billion-dollar hit to Queensland exports as volumes sink. Could you tell us about your analysis of the recent exports data, so both the ABS data and the data that CCIQ has from the certificates of origin, please?
Yeah, certainly. Well, there are two indications that we can sort of use to gauge the impact in particular about those industries affected, and also with respect to those countries that are most affected. So the ABS data released, it's only up to January at this point. So essentially we're going to see, obviously, I think February and March, I think we're going to see some quite significant contraction there. But what we can see from these are in values as well, whereas in our certificates of origin data, that's on the volumes. So essentially, if we're looking at the ABS data, we did see 13% decrease, 13.3% decrease in Queensland exports from December to January. So 953 million. So other significant falls falls in particular were India. We saw a 20.9% or 174 million contraction to India over that month. So that's year on year to January, down 25%. We saw also a significant decrease to Japan of 260 million, and that's a 25% reduction. You've got Vietnam, where we saw a 55.6% decrease over that month, or 139 million. Indonesia, 20% down, 24 million down on that. China, December to January, with 176 million down, or about 7%. And Korea was down 31 million. Almost 4%.
If we're okay. Going to look at the... Well, sorry, Marcus, yep. I was just going to ask, Do you think that those reductions in January are primarily related to COVID-19?
Well, I think, it was quite fresh then. In particular, the contagion from China. If these were the indications in January, then where the contagion has actually come in and affected some of these other countries, I think it's just going to give us an idea of the magnitude about what we can expect to see happen to our exports, over coming months. If we're looking at the volumes, which was what you discussed as well with the other article, which was on our certificates of origin, we have seen significant falls over time for our marine exports and fresh produce, as well as beef. In particular, those crustaceans were hit hard earlier in the crisis. But China's actually, started to come, recover. We're starting to see that. Well, it's reported that it has begun to recover. The curve seems to have flattened. If you believe the headlines and what is being reported, so there will be some, it will be getting back online very shortly. But how the impact that's had, the contagion on those other economies around it. So there are things like Japan and India, Korea, Vietnam. These are key export markets for us. So. How that's going to play out in the future, that's probably the most concerning. But those volumes have obviously fallen down significantly from what we saw in the volumes of our certificates of origin. Live marine exports were down 73%, fresh produce almost 17%, and beef down 8%. So they were the last numbers that I saw from the trade team.
Right, okay. Now, as well as the impact on the Queensland economy from reduced exports, now, one thing we should keep in mind is that this is a subset of all of Queensland's exports. So the bulk of our exports are of resources. We don't have any intelligence on what's been happening with resources. I mean, those bulk commodity exports appear to have been, they still seem to have been occurring. But the major impacts we've seen on exports are in marine live exports and beef. And so that's going to affect some particular regional economies. We know that's impacted in Cairns, and it will also be impacting in regions that specialise in beef. Okay. Yep. What we've seen in the last few weeks is the adoption of very strong social distancing measures, and that has led to the closure of pubs and clubs and the restaurants and the restriction of cafes and restaurants to takeaway services only. Do you have a feel for the impact, the scale of the impact of those measures on the economy, Marcus?
Well, we engage with our members, fairly often, and they have been very concerned. They've been ringing through for us to seek assistance. They've at the moment they're just stuck in shock, and then there's all the measures that have come in, essentially from the various levels of government, and obviously to try and navigate how to access some of those programs and the measures in place. So at the moment they're sort of just still in shock as to how to go forward. So the closures are having a significant impact on a lot of businesses. Essentially, the rent issue hasn't been sorted through yet. There's obviously that understanding to work in together on it, and in good faith. But at the moment, there's been nothing formal with respect to providing some sort of rent assistance. So there's still a lot of play in there about, how businesses are going to come out of it. They have, obviously you were talking about a lot of the restaurants and cafes being obviously not being able to seat people. However, the takeaway sales, even to February had picked up fairly well. So if they're able to sort of, those that didn't have a takeaway license to be able to gain that license and continue to trade, there's still opportunities for those shops to continue sort of operating. Whereas some of the other ones you talked about, the pubs and clubs and gyms in particular, how they're going to go forward when they actually have essentially no income. So how that's going to be navigated going forward? I mean, it's going to be difficult. But it's what it's done. It's this has been a crisis because it's technically been economic, where for the economy to pick back up and take off and demand and consumer spending to rise, there needs to be those outlets of where you can spend it within the retail sector, and a lot of that has been shut down. So even if the government wanted to try and stimulate the economy by providing payments and stimulatory measures, they're very limited as to where they can actually spend it.
Absolutely. So just on cafes, you mentioned that, some of them have seen that pickup, or they saw that pickup in takeaway trade in February. And so you're correct. I mean, these cafes could take advantage of the fact that, takeaway is still allowed. But what I've seen just walking around the city, a lot of these cafes have shut up. Have you noticed that they've just decided not to open?
Certainly. Yeah. Certainly. That has been the case. And that will be the the difficulty about, you know, we are talking about coming out the end of this, but I think it's going to be a very different commercial landscape. You know, whether any of these businesses are going to be able to open up again is a question. It's, you know, it's just going to be a matter of how long this is in place. You know, because it's not just those as well. Like, if you're looking at areas, electrical goods and footwear and personal accessories and clothing, they've had also in February had a very difficult month as well. You know, so most of the retail sales, half of it was in supermarkets and grocery stores. You know, and Queensland had some of had the best numbers for February. So at $47 million increase in retail sales. So, you know, we're really starting to see that retail landscape sort of change, and it's a sign of the times about, you know, changing trends within consumer activity.
Yes, indeed, it certainly is. So what we could see with coronavirus is that a lot of the retailers, which were only marginally viable prior to coronavirus, they'll just all shut down. They may not reopen. So particularly some department stores perhaps and specialty stores. So you're right. I mean, this will be there's going to be a big shake-up. Okay. Mm. In terms of the total economic impact, I've been seeing some extraordinary estimates. I've seen some forecasts of depression-like impacts or depression-like contractions in the economy. The OECD, in a paper evaluating the initial impact of COVID-19 containment measures on economic activity, has written that the impact effect of business closures could result in reductions of 15% or more in the level of output throughout the advanced economies and major emerging economies after the full implementation of confinement measures. In the median economy, output would decline by one quarter. And they have a chart, and Australia looks like it's around 22% of GDP. So we're talking really large reductions. We've seen the large lines at Centrelink. There's potentially an additional 1 million people unemployed. Total unemployment could be in the order of 2 million people. So we're talking an unemployment rate that is in the teens, could be in the high teens. Would that be your assessment of where things could end up, Marcus?
I think it certainly could. I think this is one of those crises. I'm looking at all the reports and the data and some of those projections sort of are quite daunting about where this can end up. But at the moment, from what we're seeing, they totally wouldn't be unreasonable at all. I think, you know, when sometimes they're talking, is it as bad as the GFC? Well, it's a completely different crisis to the GFC. That was a financial crisis that led into an economic crisis. This is an economic crisis, which has the potential to also turn into a financial crisis. We were in very different positions then. We had interest rates that weren't essentially at zero. You know, central banks could stimulate the economy and by providing that liquidity. You know, but to have that liquidity there, you can provide liquidity to banks to lend out or to investors or consumers or mortgage holders. But if there's no demand there, I mean, you can take the horse to water, but you can't make it drink. If there's no demand in the economy, then no one's going to go out and invest in their business or employ new people or buy a house if conditions aren't right. And the ability for the government to deal with it in the same way that they could deal as you were in the government then, Gene, to be able to have that luxury of having the ability to stimulate the economy by providing payments to people, low-income people in particular with high propensities to consume, but they're very limited in what they can do about this crisis because essentially the consumers are very limited in where they can spend their money apart from what supermarkets, liquor stores and at Bunnings.
Absolutely. So I was speaking with Steve Austin on 612 ABC Brisbane last week, and one of the comments I made was this is much worse than the situation that we found ourselves in during the financial crisis. This is a different order of magnitude of crisis. This is just extraordinary. Okay. Yep. I'd like to just ask about the JobKeeper program. So I heard Tony Burke on – so Tony Burke, opposition yep. finance – actually not finance, industrial relations spokesman. And Tony Burke was saying that the opposition, it's waiting to see how the government will be adjusting its plans regarding JobKeeper. So it's supporting this wage – the opposition is supporting the JobKeeper wage subsidy for businesses. However, it wants to reduce some of the what it sees as inequities in the policy.
Yep.
Does CCIQ have a view on that JobKeeper policy and what needs to be changed with what the government has originally announced? What is CCIQ lobbying for particular changes to that program?
I haven't been provided our position on that by my advocacy team and policy team at this stage, but I did see the Tony Burke and his interview this morning and his concerns about, in particular, well, they'd support it in principle, but essentially they were concerned about the policy as it stands now. Is that they have their concern that some businesses can actually take the money and essentially give the $1,500 to workers, but then take that off the leave entitlements. So essentially, that allows them to use that money to pay off the leave entitlements. So obviously, he's called it a situation where it should be designed to help workers and not to help balance sheets. So I know that was his. One of his key positions on it, whether they're going to see any sort of amendment around that or put any sort of conditions in place, I guess we'll see. But at this stage, CCIQ will obviously come out and take a position on that after consideration.
Yes, well, it looks like the government is still drafting the legislation, so it's a complicated policy. I was quite surprised when I heard the Prime Minister and the Treasurer explain it earlier. Was it early last week? Things are moving so quickly now. And I thought, well, that's an interesting design. I wasn't exactly expecting it. I think the Prime Minister said it was an Australian approach. It was uniquely Australian. Fair enough. Yep. But it's relatively complicated. And so, yes, we'll see what it eventually ends up looking like. But I think that was
It is going to show us, obviously, too, the level of complexity within our industrial relations system and regulatory system. So, you know, to how it's rolled out against these thousands and thousands of workplace agreements, you know, enterprise agreements.
Oh, absolutely.
Yeah, it's going to be interesting.
Fully agree with you there as someone who is an employer and someone who would much prefer a much simpler industrial relations system. Of course, that's the system we've got. The Howard government tried to reform the IR system and it was incredibly unpopular with the public. It's probably why they lost the election. And so we have what we have now. And yes, it may not be optimal in a crisis. I know that there's a debate about whether it needs to be relaxed, whether we need to make changes to that temporarily to make it much easier to find a way through this crisis. So, yes, unfortunately, that's the system we've got at the moment, though, Marcus.
Yeah, definitely. So, that's the thing. It's very when I see my, it's one of the top, the red tape and you know the compliance and the you know, the complexity of the labyrinth of, our system at the moment, like trying to employ people and the different awards and when they're changing and then there's, you know, on activities, licenses, and all of that. I mean, the members, the businesses report in the quarterly survey I do every on a continuous basis. It's always a top topic and frustration for businesses.
Oh, absolutely. Okay, so just two more questions, Marcus. Thanks so much for your time again. I know it's a Sunday afternoon, but really great chatting with you. In Queensland, we currently have 907 cases of COVID-19. There was a daily increase of 9 cases, so that was the most recent overnight figure that's come through. It looks like we might actually be flattening the curve. Do you have any thoughts on when we should start thinking about reopening some of these businesses that have been shut down, when we should loosen up on these restrictions? Have you been giving any thought to that at all?
Yes, of course. Certainly at the moment, that's one close to home for my partner has a business and it was forced to close. So, obviously that's on my mind and thinking about, well, what's going to be the trigger for when we can start to relieve restrictions, whether it's going to be a full scale, return to normal conditions, or whether there's going to be conditions put in place and restrictions on trade. I did see that this morning that in Queensland in particular, it was 9 cases. But we closed the borders and everything, so most of the cases that have sort of at this stage been contained around the southeast as well. So I'm just hoping it comes back as we can open again as quickly as possible. They're sort of my thoughts, because the longer this goes on, the more structural damage it's going to do the economy. So,
absolutely. I think it's imperative that we reopen the cafes and the bars and the clubs as soon as we can. That is having a massive adverse economic impact. I recognise we'll probably have to, have those border restrictions on for much longer, but it would be great to see if us reopening the cafes, bars, clubs, also the gyms, which is your partner's business,
yep.
Isn't it? So, yeah.
Yes, it is, yeah.
So that's been a lot of people employed in those gyms, and it's just not the same trying to do these things online. I've seen some studios have tried to offer online classes, so Pilates classes online or yoga classes, or aerobics classes or whatever it is, but it's just not the same. So you'd have to have noticed there'd have to be a big reduction in turnover in that sector as a result of the closures. Yep.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
Okay. So just finally, I saw a column by Adam Crichton, so the Australian's economics editor, yesterday on public service wages, and Adam Crichton was arguing that we should have reductions in public service wages to share the burden, share the pain. And I made a comment, or I posted on this issue, and I thought that where Crichton was coming from was a position where he didn't understand fundamental macroeconomics. It struck me that he was advocating for austerity policies in a time of recession or depression, which since Keynes, most economists recognise those policies aren't sensible. However, I got some pushback from people, including you, and you thought there might be some merit in what Crichton was saying. So I'm interested in what your thoughts on Adam's column yesterday are.
Well, I think it's a good point at the moment for us to. I mean, not so much. I'd sort of take your point there, and the first issue that I sort of thought with respect to that is obviously I made the point earlier that those measures, expenditure measures, and everything with all of this income within the economy, and obviously preserving, from what you were saying, preserving you know, the public servants in particular and their wages, which are particularly high compared to, you know, your average income in other industries. But we're in that situation now where there's very little spending going on. They won't be spending the same amount of money than what they previously were. So there is sort of some room there. But my concerns, yeah, more generally about when you were looking at of the crisis in particular, it's going to be very difficult to stimulate this economy when you don't have the luxury of being able to provide fiscal expansionary policy with respect to providing income for the multipliers to work. I think they're very limited here. That's the first point. And then the second point is, I think we all know we're over-governed. We are far too over-governed in this country. There's too many levels of government, and it's just becoming too complex, and it just makes things incredibly difficult, business conditions, for people to do business. And, you know, I mean, that's the thing. If the money is being extracted, large public services extract an extraordinary amount of money from those taxes, the more taxes and regulations and licenses that you have, yeah, then that money's being drawn out of the private sector and into the public sector. And essentially, if you're going to grow, you know, a government, these are essentially regulators and things, and the impact that they have, you know, is contractionary on business.
Yes, yes, I agree largely with that, Marcus. I think we are over-governed. That said, we certainly need to invest resources in public health. And one of the things that that I've been impressed by, well, I think Queensland Health appears to be doing a very impressive job at the moment. So that's where, if governments are going to spend money, that's where it should be directed. It's to those frontline services. It's to improving public health. So at the moment, it looks like Queensland Health is doing a really good job. So, yeah, really happy to see that.
Yeah, fantastic job.
Okay.
I mean that's a great thing. Everyone wants to see a good public service and which sort of works for the economy. But we have to. I mean, that's the thing. So they're sort of the essential role of government. You know, with health and education and you know these primary services. You know they're the backbone. But the point I'm making and the ones I'm talking about are the regulators are in there that you know are designing you know. Social engineering, everything that essentially works against business to be able to go out and generate and you know and earn income for the country. I mean, you can't multiply wealth by dividing it, and you know this is essentially where you know the government has to not be about government, but has to be about there to service the public and businesses.
Righto, we'll have to cover that issue in a future podcast, Marcus. The costs and benefits of regulation, but very good points I am largely in agreement with. Dr. Marcus Smith, Chief Economist of CCIQ, thanks so much for once again appearing on the Queensland Economy Watch podcast. It's been great.
Yep, always a pleasure.
Excellent.
Yep, great to talk again.
Thanks, Marcus.
Yep, see you soon.